captain of Ingolimus. Akivas faces his job in GOG with Keeve and Ellie and Zooey.
Go ahead. No introduction.
Yeah, I think the one thing that could keep calm is I think like Twitter is meant to exacerbate these things and make them seem maybe bring out like the worst people on every side and make them seem worse. And the people not on Twitter for the most part are much more sane, you know, and but also forget about sane, like much more representative of, I think, the average person in the world.
Yeah, I have found that my direct engagements with folks, even who post, you know, repost things I don't agree with, when I've engaged with them in the DMs, I found those to be fruitful conversations. And until today, when I was told that advocacy for innocent Jewish and Israeli lives is a White Lives Matter argument. So, you know, people just be believing anti-Semitic tropes. Which is, you know, tough for someone you started your legal career with who is still at a law firm. But I do feel, and I do want to say that on this podcast, because I think that was absolutely disgusting, and obviously a whitewashing of Jewish conflict and history is a projection of your own guilt for living in America. Anyway, I walked home. I do want to agree with you that I walked home yesterday, like, in tears for no reason, just from living through this for going on a month. And I'm not living through it. You are. But, like, we just have to believe that Twitter is a cesspool and that most people don't feel the extreme ways, both, you know, anti-Semitic and Islamophobic. Like, we have to believe that the majority of people are not those people. And despite evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, and people used to say that, and you know, people would say to me, like, oh, you're too online, and then things. But then you see, like, things that are going on in the world, and you're like, well, there's a lot of people. Now it's a very big country, and, you know, just a few thousand people doing crazy things is a drop in the bucket, right? It's nothing. You know, so maybe there's no people in positions of power who are necessary, or very few who are, making other people feel unsafe, or, you know, ripping down posters of kidnapped babies or things like that. It's not, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think we had this conversation early on and I think about it a lot of, like, you know, you're always raised that people hate you. Jews are a persecuted people over hundreds and hundreds of years. But you don't really think everybody, like, wants to directly kill you, you know? Like, you know, like, out there somewhere in the ether, like, yeah, people hate Jews. Or people say anti-Semitic things to your face, but, like, you know, I have rights. I'm in the world. I'm relatively safe. I only have to have one security guard at my synagogue. So I'm in a relatively privileged position. And then, you know, people celebrate, like, the murder of babies ripped from their beds at night, and you're like, oh, well, I didn't think it was like that. And it is like that. It's, like, sick. But how are you? I mean, I don't want to ask how you guys are doing. How could you be doing? But how are you doing, I guess, on a micro level, on a day-to-day level?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I think things like this, obviously we're talking about it now, but things like this maybe get my mind off a little bit. I've said this already, but, you know, you have, like, this pit in your stomach that never really goes away. I'm sure you and other people can relate. Like, something really bad happens in your life, and maybe you wake up in the morning and you're, like, happy for a second, and then you remember that the bad thing is going on, you know? Mm. And it's like, oh, shoot. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I can't, like, enjoy what's going on or anything like that. So it's pretty much a constant, you know, pit in your stomach, and you're not sure, like, is this going to be over in 2 weeks, or is it going to be World War III, or is your family in danger, or, you know, like, you just don't know. And nobody knows, because there's so many variables that there is no answer, right? It's not like we get spoilers. Like, there's, you know, we don't know what, you know, any one thing can set off a chain reaction that could take this completely out of control, or, you know, less likely that, you know, it could just end, basically.
Yeah, no, I heard you talk about, you did another great podcast that I'm only 2/3 of the way through, so maybe it gets really bad at the end, I don't know. But I endorse the first 20 minutes of it, podcast you did with Alex, catching up on 32 fans. People should take a listen there. And you mentioned that, like, Ella was like, oh, are you going this way? Can I get a ride to a funeral? Like, the things you've told me about your children, I've always been in awe of your children, mostly making up for your deficits, but your kids have seemed unbelievably resilient in this horrific situation. Something, if the future of the Jewish people is you know, your kids, then maybe we will be okay.
That's nice. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's maybe when you're a kid, it's like things, I don't know, maybe because like we're older and then we've, you know, lived, 30 to 40 years and we haven't seen anything like this. So we like were more aware it was impossible. But maybe for kids, it's like, well, they're younger and they already had like dealt with like one once in a lifetime thing, which was basically being trapped in their house with COVID. So like maybe they're more aware of the idea that like things can just completely change on a whim, whereas we, you know, we had it with Corona, but like ultimately we got out of it, and but we lived like such a privileged and peaceful time relative, you know, truly in the history of the world, like the best time to have been born was probably, you know, post World War II, right? Like things are, you know, better than were better than they've ever been, and who knows, maybe things are on the decline now, who knows, but like you know, we lived in such peaceful times that maybe we're like, the kids are like, okay, yeah, this is just part of living, is like bad things happen. And, you know, there are a lot of places in the world where bad things always happen, right? Where you're never safe and there's never peace, or there's never calm, or like you have food instability or things like that, you know, so.
Yeah, well, nobody here in America, very few people very interested in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict give a shit about that, what you're talking about, unfortunately.
For sure. Like, so. I mean, even, you know, even in the Middle East today, or yesterday, you know, some a Yemeni rebel group, you know, declared war on Israel. And, like, I think people were pretty much unaware they existed. And then you look them up, it's like, for one, oh, my God, they got a lot of people. And two, it's like, oh, they don't, like, they're, like, going hungry in that country. Like they are, they have like, you know, almost half the country. I think half the country doesn't have food access. Like, and like, all right, their thing is like, start a war that we're not involved in. This is a good idea. That like, they're probably being goaded on to do, you know, for financial reasons by like a larger power. So I don't know. Like sometimes it's, the world is like pretty hopeless. Like, I think we're brought up to think, like, things usually, you know, work out and, like, cooler heads prevail. And ultimately, like, nobody's really incentivized to have, like, wars where a zillion people die and you know, where everyone else is at risk. And then it's like, oh, I don't have any skin in the game because I live X. But then it's like, but ultimately, like, once it comes home to you, it's like, all right, then I'm like, I'm out, you know. But then it's like, why? You know, the, like, everyone's, you know, there's, like, people are maybe more at odds than they've been in. Since the 1940s, and like the weapons are 8 billion times. Then it was just like hand to hand combat, basically, with, you know, guns. And like, if you got shot, yeah, like if you got shot, like you still had a good chance of living. And now it's, you know, the weapons are insane and only going to get much worse. And there's some really like evil world leaders out there, and people whose only interest is in keeping power or in, I don't know, financial gain. Like, I don't even know. You know, everyone's interests are so different. It's hard to like, it's hard to like reconcile. And then you have, you know, there's no, even like the U.S., which is, you know, prides itself as like the, you know, sort of the world police, policemen, and like, you know, try and keep the peace in the world. Like, ultimately, it's just one country, and a lot of people aren't interested in what the U.S. has to say, and other people have powers. And then like the United Nations, which like does on a micro level a lot of good things, but on a macro level is, you know, completely useless and like can't stop wars or anything like that. So I don't know. That's what's going
on.
Thank
God, because
this is a New Girl podcast.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Every time we podcast, it's interesting because I feel like I have changed radically in the last 3 weeks, three and a half weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I'm coming to this podcast a different person than I was the last time we showed up for this podcast.
It's easy to say, right? It's easy to say because ultimately a lot of times life goes on and it's very easy. It's like when a team wins a championship and it's very easy to say the next day, like, oh, that's the best team to ever win, or that's the best game that's ever happened, or that's the best, you know, series finale that's ever happened for a TV show. It's very easy to have recency bias. But here it's like, I don't think things will, I'm not saying we'll never have like another good day. Of course we will, but like probably. But the, you know, like I do think like things have changed. Obviously more for me like here than maybe for the average person listening to this, but I do think like lines have been drawn in a way that you know, maybe like it's just sort of like how the world works now, and I don't know, it could be scary.
And that's the thing. I was on the phone with a friend earlier commiserating, and we were talking about that interaction I had on Instagram today, and he was like, this guy, like, he said something, and I was like, well, I'll never forget this person or this conversation for the rest of my life. And this guy, who is not Muslim, who is not Middle Eastern, who is not Arab, who is, you know, and not to say that you have to be to have any position on anything, but he is not, and he probably doesn't remember that we had this exchange 10 minutes later.
Right.
And it's like, I will never forget any of the things that I have seen, any of the people who have said them. And yeah. It's like,
but that's, I think that's now, also you, in general.
Looks like I can carry a grudge, but no, but it's like our grandparents who wouldn't buy German cars, you know, like it's like
right.
People, you don't forget. Jews have generational trauma. A lot of every persecuted minority has generational trauma, but this is, you know, luckily, thankfully, I guess, the first time that I have had to make my own list, you know, of the people in my life who, and to be clear, not who support Palestinian rights, not who support peace amongst innocent Palestinian civilians and innocent Israeli civilians, of course, but the people who have directly messaged me anti-Semitism or have directly posted anti-Semitism, and yes, there is a difference, I will not forget them. And like, I will teach my kids about those messages. And like, now I am my grandmother. And it's like, how did this happen? But like, I am changed. And it's unfortunate. But I guess it was, to your point, always a reality. And it's more of a reveal than anything else.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I do think, like, I always thought this. And maybe because, I'm so online and, I guess visibly Jewish and whatever. And it was not that I experienced a ton of anti-Semitism in my life. Certainly, like, we also, like, were lucky to grow up in probably outside of Israel, like, for sure the safest place that's ever been to be Jewish, the U.S., and maybe you want to throw Canada in there, in 2023, or at least 2022 before. Never felt safe, you know, wouldn't feel safe in a lot of, not, I don't even want to call it specific countries, but like a lot of European countries. And there's almost nowhere in the world I'm really interested in going ever, basically, because I don't feel safe. And I'm happy to, like, you know, if you want to go on trips, like, there's a lot of places in North America that are very safe, and there's plenty to see there.
Yeah, I mean, it is a scary reality that every time I've walked to and from work in the last 3 weeks, I've kept a sort of mental, like, strategy of, like, if someone confronts me and asks if I'm Jewish, if someone can, and I recognize that I have privilege in that I don't wear or maintain Jewish visible signs of my Judaism, and that's certainly a privilege that brown Jews or black Jews or observant Jews or other visible minorities don't share. So I recognize that privilege, but I am walking in New York City in one of, I think, did you say it was the biggest Jewish population in the world on your podcast?
I think Alex said, but yeah, there's more Jews in New York City than there are in Jerusalem or Or there are in Tel Aviv, yeah.
And I'm walking around wondering what my strategy is going to be if somebody asks me if I'm Jewish, like it's the fucking 1930s and I'm in Germany. Like, it's insane. And that's not because I've been threatened or directly accosted. Like, I recognize that's my anxiety, but it's, I didn't feel that 3 weeks ago. So what a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. you know, I agree. Yeah. I think we're mostly on the same page with, you know, everything over the last few weeks, and it's fun. It's nice to, you know, to have, like people who agree with you, because there's so many people out there who, you know, have like opinions, and then you see it on social media and it's like, well, at least a few years ago, I think this person would have been like kicked off social media forever. But now it's like, you know, it's the wild, wild west on, certainly on Twitter. And you could say whatever you want. You know, you see a lot of like hate speech and things like that. And really, like, there's a famous old tweet, which is like, how's some guy says, like, how's online bullying real? Just close your computer and walk away from the desk. And I do think that is true for sure. Like, I think mental health wise, like, probably, if you see things that are upsetting, just don't open social media, don't open specific pages, block, like, judiciously block, you know, anybody who upsets you. Like, their opinion doesn't matter unless they're like the president of the United States or something. Like, they're, you know, ultimately, like, it doesn't, you don't need to convince one person. There's, you know, 6-7 billion people in the world, and like, you really don't need, you won't win. Even if you do convince them, it will, like, it'll have such little impact. Like, you should, like, it would be nice, but you know, ultimately, like, if someone's bothering you, like, all right, just cut that person out of your life or ignore them for now, or you know, walk away and mute or block that person. And I think I don't know. I think in general, I think it's like bad to just like consume this stuff in real time, you know, like a war and things like that in real time. It's very unhealthy because things change every hour. Like, there'll be an hour like, ooh, that's such good news. Or like, you'll see a rumor like, hey, they're going to like trade the all the hostages for whatever. And, you know, and then it's like, oh, that probably wasn't true. Or, you know, that's like wishful thinking on one side and the other side is not interested. And you know, you could see some really terrible things. And then you see, like, I mean, we encountered people this week. You know, Stephen Fishback tweeted something about something bad happening to a baby. And there were like four people immediately in his mentions, like, defending, you know, basically like, nah, it didn't happen, or it is exaggerated, or whatever. And he, like, I know, like, had to basically, like, just like, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, this is, it's too much, you know, like, I can't deal with this kind of humanity where people are just trying to, you know, like, no one ever took Holocaust deniers seriously, but now it's like, oh, like, there's no video of the Holocaust. So, like, in 30 years, when the last survivors are gone, like, it'll be much more popular, probably. You know what I mean? Like, because they'll be like, where's the videos? Like, well, there were no videos. But it's like, people will deny things, because there are videos of a lot of what's going on the last few weeks, and people will still pretend.
A lot of it taken and put out by Hamas. Hamas wants you to believe it. Like, that we're out Hamasing Hamas.
Well, I do think, I think that's what's interesting also, is like, so you'll see like insane people on Twitter, and they'll be like, Israel, every Israeli or Zionist is a target and blah, blah, blah. And then you'll see like quotes from like the literal Palestinian president who will be like, you know, like, the Israeli aggression is bad, but we just want to live together. It's like, well, they would kick you out of like a like, you wouldn't be allowed to speak at a lot of these rallies. And he's literally the Palestinian president, or like a guy. I hadn't heard much from the Arab Israeli Knesset members, a lot of whom identify as Palestinian Arab, or they all, you know, or they all pretty much consider themselves different things. Certainly not a Zionist, but he's in Knesset because there are, you know, over 2 million Arabs in Israel, and they have rights, and they're in the Knesset. And he had an op-ed in the New York Times, and he was like, again, this guy's not a Zionist, but he like understands that Israel exists and will exist. And, you know, he's basically like, they did this, but really we just need to stop killing each other, blah, blah, blah. It's like, he is literally a Palestinian, like a very prominent person. And they would boo him if he spoke at like a rally in London or in San Francisco. Like you would literally get booed, you know, by like a bunch of white kids or grad students or whatever. Anyway, that's all I have to say about this. I'm sorry if you're not interested.
I'm not sorry.
But they did sign up. I hear what you're saying, but they did sign up for a New Girl podcast.
Honestly, I'm and to your point about blocking, and like I never try, like even the 2016 election, which was really hard, like, and not that directly hard because my immediate circle wasn't really, you know, Trumpy. Mm-hmm. And now, like, you would think my immediate circle wouldn't really be chill with murder of innocent civilians of any kind, and yet, or anti-Semitism or whatever, we've been through the list. And that's not the case. So I've started, you know, the first week I was like, I'm not going to block anyone. I'm going to hear people out. I'm going to listen. And then I was like, oh, that's anti-Semitism blocked. Like that, like you can't listen to people who hate you. And that's not the, I'm not saying that's the majority of people who are pro-Palestinian. I'm just like, there's absolute anti-Semitic garbage and I can't listen to that portion of it. So I started blocking. And I wasn't in a good emotional place. I had to block. And I said to myself, but I'm only going to unfollow because, you know, when hopefully cooler heads prevail and we're moving towards some, whatever the next phase of this is, I'll come back to those people and I'll refollow them and I'll And then my friend was like, who is a gay Jewish person, was like, if somebody was posting anti-LGBT stuff on their profile, would you unfollow them and come back? I said, absolutely not. And he was like, then why do you not hold your own identity to the same level of importance? Mm-hmm. Like if somebody is posting anti-Semitism, you don't have to have them in your life or you don't have to have them on your follower list. You don't. And it's like, it's true. Even then I was like policing my own feelings about anti-Semitism. Like I'll let this person back in. I just, while we're at war, have to take a break. And like the reality is the only, Dan Savage says this, like the only leverage you have is your presence. And so there are friends of mine who I am not friends with anymore because they revealed how they feel or how they don't give a shit about me or whatever. And it's like, I'm not sorry to the podcast. I mean, I'm sorry to the podcast listeners for any trauma this might be. If this is an escape, this should be an escape, whatever. But like, I'm not sorry for posting. I'm not sorry for speaking up as a Jewish person. Like the only leverage I have is my presence in someone's life, phone, AirPods, Twitter feed, whatever. And I don't know, that's it. Like that's all I can do from here. And it's not much, but it's, I don't know. It's like Chester still wearing his yarmulke, even though people are saying like, maybe you shouldn't in New York. It's like, that's all we can do, right? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you should wear a yarmulke. You shouldn't take down your mezuzah. Like, you know, you can't act scared. Yeah, listen, maybe 3 months from now, this will have blown off and things will be back to normal. It's not impossible. I'm not sure I bet on it, but it's not impossible.
And that's like the other thing. And this is like really dark and maybe I'll edit this out of the podcast, but like the calls for the freeing of the hostages, of course, yes. But like those hostages' lives are ruined. Like, Jewish people's lives are ruined. Palestinian people's lives are ruined. Like, this is trauma that spreads. Like, when things, like, calm down, like, I don't know how we all get past this moment.
No, for sure. I think it's the problem with any of these things. It's like if you know one person, and there's a lot of people who know more than one person, but if you know one person, you know, who died in the, since the war started in the last month, like that's, you know, that will forever ruin or change your life, right? It'll be one of the, you know, things you remember when you're 90 years old. It'll be like, you know, one of the first bullet points in your life. Like, and there's, you know, and that's, you know, tens of thousands of people and hopefully not more, but very possibly. And for sure. Yeah. Every person who dies, it's like, you know, ruins many other people's lives. You know, and for what? I feel like, you know, there's no grown-ups, I feel like, in charge of the world sometimes.
sort of a rough transition, but before we get to New Girl, you've checked in with Rob about this because that's how you know things are bad. I'm listening to him an app because I just want to get a weekly update on you. So it's like, all right, how dejected do Akiva sound in his intro this week? It's like a litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
But you talked to Rob about Chester and your fantasy football league, but we haven't discussed it. And I'm in there, baby. I'm in there more than you and Rob.
Yes, you are very much involved. You're Lash Probst. For people who don't know, very briefly, it is a fantasy football league, but it's very survivor themed. And every week, someone gets voted out from the tribe that did the worst that week. And it was an insane idea that Alex had last football season, and we ended up doing it. And I guess it's been a success. I think the people in it take it incredibly seriously and are really spending a lot of time on it. So I think what's your impression?
It is the dumbest thing that I have ever been a part of. And I'm a part of many exceedingly dumb things, including this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things that, like, thankfully everyone is taking it incredibly seriously, and the like more serious everyone's taking it, the more hysterical and dumb it becomes. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it's like not the dumbest. It's not even dumb at all. You know, like taking a dumb thing like it's the most important, treating it like it's the most important thing in the world is hysterical to me. And I have not missed a tribal. Like, I'm there every week. I'm following the confessionals. People are putting confessionals in a chat for 15 people that are paying attention to this and like telling us what's going to happen and where their alliances are. And we're like watching it like the stupid show that it is. And then I come in and I ask irrelevant questions and mostly mock everyone who's participating. And then we vote somebody out. And it's like, people get upset. It's hysterical.
Yeah, no, I think people are upset. I'm not really involved. I've been very busy, and I feel like it's hard for two people to be, like Alex is in charge of our team, and Mike runs him and Rob's team. It's hard for two people to really, you know, there's never really been Survivor people playing as a pair. It's hard to do that, but listen, the people who are in it seem to be really into it and take it very seriously, and there's probably a million alliances I don't know about because I'm not really involved. I like just wake up in, like Wednesday mornings and like watch a thing to see if we were voted out, but I don't really know anything beyond that.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, it's like I live in fear because like if I don't count that there's idols, there's advantages, they have shot in the darks. There's a shot in the dark that has hit successfully. It's exciting times.
I do think we hit the rules pretty well. I thought we would like have some like rules that would break the league. Like Alex wanted to have a random stat basically decide who gets voted out. And the one thing I was sort of adamant about is that it should be head to head. So you have matchups and, let's say, you know, seven different matches, 14 people left. Whoever wins 4-3 is, they don't go to tribal. So that I was right about. But, yeah, it's been quite interesting.
I mean, there are some rules that need to change.
Like, oh,
I
for
think,
sure.
Honestly, yeah. I think the social part of it, I think a couple of things is like, and I don't play fantasy football. So just from what I've seen and I've seen people say and I agree with is like the swap was like a schoolyard pick and that should not have been the case.
No, for
like,
sure. Because
there's a reason Survivor doesn't do that.
Yeah, no, that
and
was
then,
a mistake.
And then the tribes are allowed to like talk to everyone in the game. Like there definitely should have been like an honor code of like you can only talk to the people.
It makes
on
sense,
your tribe.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
And like that would be so exciting. And the way that Survivor is like you get switched up at a swap and it's like, are we still working together or have they made better alliances on that side of things? I don't know. But when like you can still talk to the people you're working with, it's like Oh God, the next banana minute is like, is Yosef's going to be like at his bar mitzvah?
Is Yosef up or no? Oh, I was thinking about a banana minute. All right, we'll get him
there
for next week. I have
Noam
here.
And Noam doesn't get jealous. Like if I were a kid, maybe my brother wouldn't care and I would. So it would just be me. Like I'd go ballistic if my brother was getting all of this. Like
he's a big guy.
My dad.
I asked him. He's not interested. He's a big guy. He's too cool for it.
What do you mean he's a big guy?
I'm saying he's in fifth grade. Yosef's a first grader. He's a fifth grader. He's not a.
Man, he's a fifth grader. How old was he during his Among Us birthday party?
How old were you during the Among Us?
I thought he was 10. No, but he's
no, he's turning 10.
Now. Oh, he's turning 10.
No,
oops.
You're 9 now.
So it was maybe you his are 8th turning birthday? 10.
It was, no, it was... No, you were not turning 9. You were turning 7.
Get him on the mic.
He was turning 7. It was
there
the,
was no
it
way was, it was 4 years ago.
It was winter 2020.
Oh, my God. Remember when the only trolls you had to worry about were 10-year-olds in Among Us, like, calling you a poop head?
Honestly, I'll remember that very fondly, that I would, like, play, like, 4 hours a night. I mean, my wife probably, like, I think the only reason I stayed married is because... like there was just no places were open to like file papers or anything like. But when I was like, she would like wake up in the morning and I'd still be playing Among Us and I'd be like, I played like. Well, the craziest thing I ever did was a guy I forget if he said like hate speech to me or he was like really being mean. So I took out a second computer and I cheated. I basically put one of the two computers. Like I would use the code. Eventually, I took control of the room because like the first person, like the whatever. I had the code for the room, and this guy and his friend were in the room, and I put one of them on cams to like watch what would happen, and then I would immediately like see who got murdered. Like if the cams guy got murdered, I'd be like, oh, I was right there. And I won like 30 games in a row and they were like calling me the greatest player of all time. And then they would be like, this guy would be like, he's cheating. And I'd be like, stop talking. You just hate that you're losing. That was, you know, probably not my proudest
moment.
Didn't you
change your name to like Kiwi Goat or something? Like,
it was Goatee Claws. Goatee
Claws. Goatee
Claws, yeah.
Goatee Claws.
Goatee Claws. That was my name. Yeah. Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm proud of it, but I will look back fondly on things like that. Like that was, you know, some pandemic fun. Simpler time, even though we thought that was like the worst time of our whole lives at that point.
You want to know what I haven't made this connection before, but my current like mindless fixation that's probably serving a similar purpose as your obsession with Among Us was then is, did I say complete the sentence? Anyway. There is a TikToker named like Pixarella or something like Pixie who posts like her playing The Sims.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it so funny. Like, first of all, I think she's so funny, like her commentary. And then like she'll post like small TikTok videos and then she screams live and puts it on YouTube. And I have watched probably like 12 hours of this content in the last week, like mm-hmm. it's like the best reality show on television. It's like she has all of these like mods and special packs and whatever, and so she's playing with like Shrek and all these like fairy tale characters, and it's just like I'm like I've got to see what happens with like Shrekunzel's wedding, who is the daughter of Shrek and Rapunzel, and like I need to know if they're getting a divorce. Like I'm like addicted to it. And it's like the most embarrassing thing I've ever done, but I love it. I recommend it if anyone's looking for mindless entertainment. Amazing.
No, for sure. I wish I don't really have any shows right now that I'm super into, and I wish there was something I could. I mean, I have football, but that goes away the middle of the week, the whole, you know, most of the week. So,
it has been a welcome indulgence in my life, and my boyfriend is like sick of it because I'm like, oh my God, like Farquaad showed up, and it's like he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this is juicy. Oh God.
Jeez.
All right, let's talk about this episode, season 5, episode 14, 300 feet. Originally aired April 12, 2016. Also a difficult time, but in a different way. And then I'm like, 2016. Like I was about to go to law school at the end of this year. I feel like New Girl ended so long ago, but it really wasn't that long ago.
Well, this is 2016, so I assume the show ended in 2019, probably, right? Or 2018. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem that dated. You know, Jeff Galooly references like we have in this episode are timeless. You want Kiwi's Digest?
Yep.
Okay, the 300 feet refers, I believe, to the restraining order that Sam from the last episode, who I think I said was not coming back. He's back and he gets a restraining order from Jess. Kind of weird. I'm kind of surprised about that. Meanwhile, there's a new bar in town owned by Busy Phillips that becomes major competitors for the bar. We didn't know the name. At least I didn't know the name, but we find out the name in this episode. No spoilers yet. We'll get there. But Nick and Schmidt and CeCe's bar. You know, CeCe's around. Winston's still a cop. But those are really the two storylines.
Strayed too far from the mic. I miss when I used to use my earbuds and not the mic, and then I could just roam free. Let's go to producer Kelly here for the PK Digest. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. Producer Kelly is back for her least favorite episode in all of New Girl. I skip this in every binge but watch to atone for my producing failures. The representation of how her restraining orders work makes me completely insane. I have never hated just more her stalking this man and then... giving into her completely heinous behavior is infuriating. She is not being adorkable. She is being completely toxic. OMG, am I just too close to this? So Kelly works in family law and DV and is very, very familiar with very real and necessary restraining orders. And yeah, I can imagine this episode would be frustrating for somebody who works in that area. Absolutely ludicrous sitcomification of that. You mentioned in your digest that you you were like, it's weird that he gets a restraining order, so I feel like you're probably in the same camp.
I'm on the same page because it's like a justified restraining order. Like, she explains that she is she is basically stalking him and leaving him long voicemails and telling him a story about the pet rabbit whose name I'm forgetting now that did, you know.
Yeah, it's like Captain Flops. I forget what it is. Something
Captain
ridiculous.
Flappy Ears or something. And, like, they make it seem like it's a justified restraining order. And it's like, well, that's weird, you know. Because in the show, it's like, well, you know, Jess, she's Jess. But, like, I feel like a lot of restraining orders is probably, like, they have people like, what do you mean? It's just Bob, you know.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't pass the, like, gender reversal test. Like, if Winston was doing this to... Ali or one of his other exes, like, we'd be out here, well, we're out here saying the same thing, but some people would, like, only find that offensive. And it's like, oh, Jess is, like, I don't know, cute. Like, I think it would be, like, an interesting move to, like, take a journey on, like, a darker show, like It's Always Sunny or something, where Jess, like, legitimately is going insane and, like, deserves the restraining order, and we, like, go down that road. I don't think it works in, like, a meet cute, like a re-meet cute moment.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it was a mistake. I don't think it's like, I don't think we're even putting 2023 values on a 2016 episode. I think it was strange then.
Yeah, no. And again, to your point, like, all the efforts that go to setting up that it is legitimate and justified, including, like, his emotional reaction to her last week and, like, explaining how their breakup, like, really impacted his life. Like, they've done two episodes of work justifying the restraining order, and then in 10 seconds he's like, yeah, I only did that because, like, I'm obsessed with you and couldn't stop thinking about you either, so, like, let's be together. That's, like, not consistent there. It's funny, like, when Kelly says she's, like, so toxic, it's not adorable. When Jess says, like, I'm not a restraining order person, I'm like, actually, like, like, not maybe not the typical person you'd think of that, but,
right.
Like, yeah, I could see Jess, like, obsessing so much over somebody. Like, that part read true, that Jess went completely crazy and continued to obsess over him until she got a restraining order. Like, that did track to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think she is... like an accidental restraining order, but still, yeah, I think it's a little weird that they did this. If it was undeserved, then maybe it would make more sense, you know, or like a comedy of errors type of thing, like Curb Your Enthusiasm esque, like accidentally getting on, you know, restraining order or something. That's different. But yeah, here I think like a deserved one is it, for your main character, is a little bizarre.
I did like sort of Winston's cop perspective here, like that they didn't have him like be sort of in on it and like, you know, I'll help you get through the loopholes or like how to get around it or something. Like, I liked Winston's sort of like hardo stance on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he had a lot of funny lines, like when he said, I don't need internal affairs crawling up in my holes. Like, gross. I did like that.
Yeah.
There's an IMDb goof that I think is necessary to call out here when Jess, you know, won't let it lie and instead goes to leave Sam a note at work on his car and ends up in the bed of his truck. You think Sam, does it track that Sam owns a pickup truck to you?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think he could be a pickup truck guy. He's got that like gruffy feel that could be pickup trucks.
I don't know. I don't see it, but like maybe in the scheme of like in the last 2 years when he was on this like exploration, he ended up with a pickup truck. But Jess ends up in the bed of the truck, and IMDb says there's no way that someone as tall as Sam wouldn't have seen Jess in the low bed of his truck. Even if she didn't move, which she clearly did, he would see her in his periffs. Well, they said peripheral, but in his periffs. And he didn't have anything in the bed, so seeing something would definitely get his attention.
Yeah.
I just love the idea that somebody was so offended by this that they went to IMDb and filed it as a goof.
That is funny. Do you know what I was thinking also?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what do you think of the use of the Selena Gomez here?
Well, I think that's the most interesting nuanced part of the entire episode.
That he's a huge Selena Gomez fan?
I think they play the song for laughs, like that Sam is like listening to Selena Gomez, like, oh, wow, that's so crazy. But I also think the fact that he is listening and invested in and singing along to a breakup song is significant and doing more work to explain why he takes her back than like any other plot development in this episode.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The heart
but I feel like you were going to have something more fun to say about it.
No, I think it's interesting. Although at the end, although correct me if I'm wrong, at the end of the episodes, when spoilers, they are kissing in the car, blocking traffic. The song that comes on is not a Selena Gomez song, right?
What song is it? I don't know.
I don't remember. I meant to like stop and look it up, but it was right before we recorded. I think that's a miss. I think even if it wasn't the most famous song, it would have made more sense to have another Selena Gomez song.
Oh, is it the I Can't Keep My Head to Myself? Does that play?
I don't remember.
Let me see. I'm going to go to it because like, yeah, I don't want to have to do this from the editing room.
Mm-mm.
So might as well do it now. What else are we doing, you know? I could be screaming about anti-Semitism or I could be looking up.
No, this is very important.
Just as important, if not more so.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And then it's like, wow, we are. I feel like we've been at the halfway point of season 5 for like 6 months.
It does. It is true. Like this episode is like, oh, there's only 8 more left. But like, oh, yeah, we've been at that stage for months and months and months.
OK, here we go. Hold on. I'm putting the. Let's see. All right. Hurry up. Woman, get a room. Actually, I feel bad. Wait, does the song play?
Yeah. When they're smooching.
All right. I haven't really grown up. Get in. Oh, I see. Yeah, it's like a hipstery song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this song. It's like, I'll sing it, see if you can get it. It's like, now I see you're the one for me. Like, it sounds like She and Him, you know? Like, Zooey's band.
Yeah. You know what's weird? I just Googled, now I see you're the one for me, because I can't... And it comes up New Girl. I guess this song is mostly known from New Girl. Tessa Rose Jackson, Now I See.
I don't know why I'm laughing so hard at that, but just like, what a terrible podcast listening experience that was for me to come back to listen to a song, mm-hmm. thinking I'm going to know it right away. I don't know it. I sing it horrifically. You just Google the lyrics, which I guess I should have done. I didn't think there was a chance that those two lyrics were going to be sufficient to find this song.
Right. Usually, whenever I'm looking up a lyric, usually you're looking for like a proper noun or something, you know, because like
right.
a lot of something lyrics are pretty generic, you
yeah.
know, if when you really get down to brass tacks, a lot of them are generic. So you're looking for something. And that is not, but amazingly, the literal episode of New Girl came up. I guess this song really spoke to a lot of people.
But not us. We think it was a mess.
I mean, it makes no sense that I have a Selena Gomez song here. But I will say about the show, you know, because that song was probably not cheap then or now. They spend so much money on guest stars. Maybe they save money by losing a cast member, and they spend it on guest stars. But like every week there is a named guest star. Like we got Busy Phillips this week as the rival bar owner. Every week there's like, oh, that's a really famous person. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. But you say, well, I do think a lot of these people have become more famous now than they were then. Like Natasha Lyonne is definitely more famous now. Wait, was she on this?
Natasha Lyonne, yeah, I believe she was in the show, right?
We've definitely talked about her. Like, there are some people who have been guest stars that have more impact now, I think, than they even did then. Mm-hmm. But it's a good point. Like, they do have huge, like, Jamie Lee Curtis, Rob Reiner. Busy Phillips is probably about the same amount of fame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point. But because did they ever have, like, when did Coach leave? I should know this. Hold on, let me look.
In the last season, no?
Yeah, but so when you say, like, they lost a cast member, so maybe they, like, gained budget, like, he didn't, like, leave halfway through. You know, I don't know how, like, industry stuff works.
I don't remember. But I think, I was trying to think out loud.
Imagine me. I don't want to bump Yosef's See You Wouldn't Want to Be You, but I would love to cut I Don't Remember, and that be just, like, the intro and outro of this podcast.
Yeah, I think that it was towards the end of last season, but not the very end.
Anyway, I also don't know how that kind of stuff works, like, or like music rights. Like, I don't know. Don't people really want like exposure? I'm sure they take like not that much money for like relatively.
Oh yeah, Tessa Rose Jackson probably. There's probably, you know, got whatever fee, but Taylor Swift, you know, I'm sure there's a set amount. And it has to be the right type of show, whatever. You know, I think like big name artists probably, that's how they make that, you know, when they're not in their prime anymore, that's probably how they make a lot of their money.
Did you see that Seth Meyers? I didn't see the interview, but the Seth, like most people on TikTok, I didn't see the full context, but that Seth Meyers like told a story about that Taylor Swift wrote her own like opening SNL monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to it. I'm like, that's like pretty amazing. She's really I might be coming a Swiftie having nothing to do with the music. I just respect her as a woman.
What I've heard, just for some reason, there's like more talk about SNL and like industry stuff than any other show. And I think what happens sometimes is big names. It's more often stand-up comedians. So I can't speak for what Taylor Swift did, but you'll hear stories about like, you know, like, oh, Jerry Seinfeld, the 90s was coming in. He was also going to bring like a couple Seinfeld writers with him. So I wonder if Taylor brought a couple like funny people in her world, you know what I mean, to do it with her. Not that she can't do it herself, but I'm saying that's usually what it is for even stand-up comedians.
I mean, the story he told, which, you know, who knows, was that she like showed up and was like, I wrote a song for the monologue.
Oh, well, that's different. Oh, yeah, you're right. She wrote a song. That's different. I mean, obviously,
now, did she write it with her own people?
No, I was thinking jokes or like a 5-minute stand-up set. Yeah, if she is doing a song, I think she's capable of doing that herself. I don't know.
But it had it was basically like jokes put to the song. So like, mm-hmm. Did she write it completely on her own? Like, I don't know. But
I don't know.
He told a story like she showed up.
Did she write her own stuff in general? Is that known?
She collaborates, but she's a singer-songwriter.
Yes, but does she have the only writing credit on most of her albums, outside the ones that were like, you know, done with the Bon Iver guy and Aaron Dessner from The National? Like, I wonder. Here, let's see. So Midnight's her most recent album. Let's see who has soul writing.
I'm looking at this now. I mean, she's the sole writer on Love Story, which was like more around the SNL time.
So Jack Antonoff has a writing credit on almost every song. She obviously does too, but Antonoff.
But of the most recent one, like, yeah, they've been collaborating recently. I think originally, let's see, like, I'm looking at Fearless. This is so fascinating, I'm sure. Yeah. This is, like, not easy to find.
Well, I see some albums, it seems like about half of the songs she wrote, and then half of them she's got... you know, sort of producer du jour, but we're not Swifties. The Swifties would probably getting mad that we're even.
I mean, I'm looking at all of the songs on Fearless.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so she's a co-writer on You Belong With Me. 15, she's the sole songwriter, which makes sense because that's like very personal. So I feel like especially her earlier stuff, which makes sense. Probably not a lot of opportunity for early collaboration when you're, I don't know.
Not as famous, probably less people interested. Yeah. Anyway.
What's your take on Jack Antonoff before you pivot?
Jack Antonoff?
Yeah, you listen to every album.
Wait, is Jack Antonoff, he's the one who was with Lena Dunham?
Yeah, but now he's married to someone else.
Who's he married to now? My wife's old boss, who was also her very good friend, we used to play the Fun album when we'd go to her house, which was like above the office in Manhattan. And we'd sleep there one night a week because we'd finish work so late and it was a long drive up. And she would blast this Fun album. Like, I can't believe like the neighbors next door and downstairs never came up once. Ear splittingly loud. So I listened to this album at like 10 billion decibels, Jack Antonoff's Fun album, 8 million times. So I did like it, but it's like, you know, I don't think I could listen to it again. I'm scarred from it. He's married to Margaret Qualley, who is the daughter of Andy McDowell, but I really liked the show she was in, The Maid, who Andy McDowell, I believe, is also in. I really liked a maid, not the maid, sorry. But yeah, she's great in that, in that show. It's depressing, but I recommend it if you're willing to watch it. It's a Netflix series.
10-year age gap between Margaret Qualley and Jack Antonoff.
But you know what? If your mom is like a celebrity, I feel like you're like 7 going on, you know, 12, and then, you know, you age faster probably in Hollywood.
I think it's a better take that, like, she's a grown adult woman. She's 29. I don't know that we want to start saying 7-year-olds age quickly in this context.
Well, I said the 12. I'm just saying, like, I think, like, Hollywood kids are very precocious. So when they're 21, they're probably 31. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not endorsing that opinion, but I'm also not.
She was briefly romantically linked.
I just want to say.
She was briefly romantically linked to Pete Davidson. Do you think that's in every sort of celebrity's bio? They just sneak it in and nobody's able to, like, deny it.
She's got quite a past. Shia LaBeouf, Pete Davidson, and now husband Jack Antonoff. She's a real blind spot for me. I hear her name often. I have no idea who she is. Like, I don't think I've watched. I'm looking at her credits. I didn't see Once Upon a Time in high school, in Hollywood. If it was in high school, I probably would have saw it. I did not watch Fosse Verdon. I did not watch Maid, though I heard great things about all of these projects. She's in a lot of very popular projects. But I don't know her. Who cares? I don't know why I just launched into that.
Yeah, we're really on a lot of tangents. We haven't even gotten to the bar.
All right, well, let's just skip through all this. We're not for it, but it does end up with Sam and Jess ultimately getting back together. I think we agree we're critical of the way they get back together, but are you excited at more Sam and Jess?
No, I don't think I'm excited.
Is this to have disaster
honestly.
Written all over it?
I don't think I'm excited.
All right. So we're Team Winston, I guess.
Yeah, I'm done with Sam. He doesn't interest me. I assume since they end the episode smooching, we're going to see him again at least one more week, but I'm finished with him in this whole storyline.
I love Sam. I don't think Sam and Jess should be back together here.
I think it's hard to build a relationship after a restraining order, I feel like, also. You know?
Well, Kelly said something like they're making it like Sam and Jess had this big, like, betrayal breakup or whatever, but, like, it is true. Like, they broke up because Nick kissed Jess and, like, Sam wasn't, like, satisfied with the resolution or, like, couldn't really trust her after that. Like, I guess they did have the kind of breakup that might lead to people getting back together 2 years later because they didn't end the relationship because, like, one of them fell out of love or it wasn't working or they moved. Like, they ended it basically over a misunderstanding. I think the bad fact here is that Jess then dated Nick for 2 years or however long it was. So, like, that would make it hard for me to come back from here. Is like, I broke up with you because I was suspicious of your impropriety with your roommate, and then you confirmed that by dating him for like a year and a half.
Yeah, and also, like, he just got her broken. He just got her. She's a menace. He should move away from Jess, right?
Yeah.
His instincts are right.
Agree. All right, let's get to Griffin versus Presh. PK says, how do you feel about the reveal that the bar is named the Griffin? And then also I want to add, which is a better bar name, Presh or the Griffin?
Yeah, the Griffin is a good bar name, but it's a bad bar name, I think, for a dive bar. Like, I feel like the Griffin should be fancy. Presh also should be fancy, but I feel like we'll close within a week.
I hate the name Presh. It's a perfect name for this kind of bar, this episode. But, like, I would never go to a place named Presh. I feel like that's a place where, like, I'd visit my friends in L.A. and they'd be like, oh, my God, there's, like, a restaurant opening called Presh. We have to go. It's, like, vegan and everything's foam. And I'm like, I don't want to go to Presh. The Griffin, that's interesting. I can see the bar you're picturing when you say the Griffin, but I also think the Griffin is, like, a perfect, like, everything is dark wood and, like, carpeting, like, bar with mm-hmm. Nick behind the bar. I do think the best, most successful part of this episode with great payoff is the nutmeg wholesaler bit.
Very funny joke that they say he looks like a nutmeg wholesaler. And they go into that, and then there's a guy, and they get, like, I would have loved to be in the casting room where they're, like, analyzing fake Nicks for which one gets, like, the walk-on part. That must have been very funny.
Yeah.
So.
Which goes with Jake Johnson's whole effort to find the imposter Nick, which, by the way, they did find. That fake Jake Johnson I was telling you about before.
They found that guy.
Yeah, they found him. He came on the podcast. I didn't listen to it, but.
Hmm. Are they still doing the podcast?
Well, he has his own podcast, as not Welcome to Our Show. He's on his own, like, we solve your problems or something.
And he's never been on, right?
Has he never been on? I don't know. Like, a lot of the other people have been. And Max Greenfield was just on Nick's Jake Johnson's podcast. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yes, Jake Johnson came on Welcome to Our Show, a conversation with Jake Johnson.
I'll say this. The last episode. Why do they say reruns? The last live episode is. It's weird because they bounce around so much. It's actually hard to tell. May have been May? But they, like, replay them on their feed for some reason. There's, like, a lot of reruns. But it looks like season 2, episode 11 from May is the most recent episode they've done. But they were replaying episodes through the summer. But it's been 2 months now. So maybe they're done. Maybe Goodbye to Our Show is the new title.
That's interesting. I wonder why. I'm going to look just to see.
Honestly,
if
like, I don't know if they record in person. If they record in person, then if anyone is, like, going to do, you know, going to Vancouver to film a movie or something, they can't do it.
Yeah, but, like, the office ladies, like, Jenna Fisher was, like, in her closet with, like, a microphone, like, for sound quality or something. Like, you know better than anyone that you can literally record a podcast from anywhere.
For sure. Yeah, no, I'll say it's a bad sign. I Twitter searched Lamorne Morris's name. And no one seems to really be asking about the podcast if I did the search right. So, I don't know. Maybe it's dead.
I mean, it's weird if you're rerunning things through August to just stop in August and not put out anything. But, like, I guess who are we to say it's weird to take an unannounced, seemingly indefinite pause? They could be back next week.
It's true. It is true.
Did they get? Did you already click away?
Season 2 episode? They're halfway through season 2. And then now they've aired it all twice because they went back and did all season 2.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Who wins? Who gets there first? Us or them?
I think we have to get to the end first.
I think we'll get to the end first.
We've
I'm
had
pretty
such
confident.
A head start. This is not to like toot our own horn. Like we've been at it years before they. We should be done before they've even started.
Yeah, I agree. We're going
to
finish.
I still think it's a worthwhile question to ask who's going to finish first, us or Pretty Pretty Good Friends or whatever.
They have so many episodes to do.
True. All right.
I feel like if it came close, we'll start doing two a week, and they could do three, and we could do four, and we'll race to the end.
Kiwi, what do you think of valet? Schmidt's very into the fact that Presh has valet, and that's also, I think it gets lost, but that's the source of the issue that's never resolved. They just call it truce, but apparently Presh's valet is mm-hmm. using all their spots to park cars in.
Yeah, very Los Angeles. You know, I know Cher says in Clueless that everywhere has valet, so you don't have to learn to park in California. I don't know. Valet sounds nice, but it seems very, you know what? I remember people like thinking it was weird. My college, it was very hard to park at my college because it's in Upper Manhattan and Manhattan parking is brutal. And there was a, local restaurant that had valet parking, like a fancy fish restaurant in Washington Heights. And they would like use one of our parking lots. And at the time I was like, well, there's so few spots, but in hindsight, it's like, it's probably like a nice, quid pro quo for the community. I don't know, valet. I feel like I've encountered valet so few times outside of weddings. You know, I don't know. How often do you get valeted?
Well, I never drive, so it's like tough.
Right.
But I was watching, and I think it's a good point to the California bit is a good call out. Because when I was watching, I was like, who's driving to the bar? And it's like, oh, yes, in California. But, I'm watching a new to me show called Hustle, which is like a UK show
mm-hmm.
about this like ring of con artists who it's got sort of like a Dexter spin in that they like only con like mean people, but they're not doing it for good. Like they keep their money. And I say that Dexter's, I've never seen an episode of Dexter, but one of the ways they like have to get a nice car as part of the con and like a guy just goes through a revolving door of a hotel and then comes out the door of the hotel as like a guy comes in and he's like, valet, sir. And the guy just tosses him his keys and he just drives off with the car. And obviously that's a TV show. It's crazy in theory that you just like toss your keys to someone who could just be standing at a podium.
No, that it seems very like decadent. Like it seems great. I like the idea of it.
I just think like someone could steal your car. Like you don't know that just like someone has a vest. Like,
well, how does it work? If the valet steals your car, is the valet company or the restaurant or the venue responsible?
I mean, if my laundromat or dry cleaner is not responsible for lost or stolen goods, I don't think they're saying if someone steals your car, it's our issue.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But you know. As Connie later demonstrates, perhaps every valet has to have a camera and then you can sort of figure out who did it. But anyway, I think it really does track that Schmidt's like enamored by this hipster bar. We find out, as you said, that Billy Phillips is going to be playing Connie, who owns Presh. Producer Kelly says, thoughts on Busy Phillips? Do you think she reoccurs? I generally think she's fine, but I think she's not good in this ep. The monologue about her bad year and then her actual interaction with Peter were lame.
Yeah, it's not her, but they give her a bad gig. I remember reading about her once. She's like, I think her shtick was like she's everyone's best friend in Hollywood. She's like, people really like her and that she's sort of like the number two everywhere and is like a good friend and whatever. I think in general she's been I like her in a lot of things. But here, the idea of the role is good. But she's not as cartoony as, what's the senator's name?
Oh, Fawn Moscato.
Fawn Moscato. Like, she's not like that, so she doesn't really, I don't know. And ultimately she folds. I didn't love the role.
I think I'm cooling on Busy Phillips in general.
Did you watch Cougar Town?
Yes.
Okay.
Bet you didn't expect a yes there.
I was actually 50-50. I wouldn't have asked if I thought the answer was no. I'm not shocked that you watched a show called Cougar Town.
That was with Courtney Cox and the guy from Scrubs. That mm-hmm. was like pretty watchable. Like if you're on an airplane for a couple hours, I'm sure they have a couple episodes of Cougar Town available. Yeah.
She's like one of the rival women who come later on in Dawson's Creek.
Oh, they're going to say Cougar Town. I was like, no, she's not.
No, she's at the end of Dawson's
Creek. Don't mansplain Busy Phillips on Cougar Town to me.
I don't think I ever saw Cougar. Freaks and Geeks, first thing that I saw. Dawson's Creek. I was definitely out by the end of Dawson's Creek, but I know she was in it. ER. That's all I know her from.
Yeah, she, I mean, busy tonight, but.
Oh, Vice Principal. She's in that.
All right. I mean, busy. I think I'm just like cooling on her vibe. We talked about the name, cha-cha-cha. I do think it's, like, a bit unrealistic that Schmidt didn't know the name of the bar. Like, maybe Cece shouldn't have known the name of the bar. I think my biggest complaint about this section of the episode is that, like, Cece is just, like, not used. I think it's, like, pretty funny when she gets drunk. But other than that, like, they're just so focused on this dynamic between Nick and Schmidt. And, like, it's a beautiful dynamic between Nick and Schmidt. But we've gone down this road before. We just went down this road with Winston and Nick about, like, wanting to respect Nick and the bar. Now Schmidt has to respect Nick and the bar. I feel like they could have done something more interesting with the three of them.
Yeah, I think it's a clear shout out to the viewers of the show. Is Allie tweeting live on the episode? But that's okay. It's the Chappelle.
Akiva reading tweets.
Well, I'll
Twitter,
tell you why. Though. I have Twitter open, and then it like pops up an alert, and it's like three people who recently tweeted their faces, and I see this red
that's
shirt.
A great tweet. It's a great
black
tweet.
Hair going left. I'm like, oh, that's Allie.
It's a great tweet. Tell everyone the tweet. First of all, watch the video that Chappelle posted.
So Chappelle posted, our friend Chappelle posted a video of him rock climbing with Taryn Armstrong, and he is struggling. And you said, I'm going to save this and send it to girls when you ghost them. That's pretty funny. Oh, no. Now he's like hanging by. Is rock climbing dangerous? Can you just fall off? I guess he's not so high.
I think there's like a mat, but like it's like a pretty hilarious. I mean, like kudos to him. It like looks very hard or whatever. But like it's just like him in his little sweatpants, like struggling. And like hanging.
Maybe I'm stupid, but I would have thought, and I know it's an Olympic sport, but it's only been in one Olympics. And it was one of like the only sports I really didn't cover at all in Tokyo. I would think you rock climb in shorts. But now I see now I'm seeing people do it in pants, and I think like that's not what I would have expected. Now I gotta go to like Olympic rock climbing and see what the pros are doing. Are they doing, what do you think, are they doing shorts or pants?
I mean, I don't know, like I wouldn't go by what Chappelle's wearing to decide what.
No, but I see Taryn is also doing it in pants,
but these are not professional
but
rock
he's
climbers.
Like that's his thing, he's like into rock climbing. All right, I'm gonna spoil it for you.
But, like, okay, you can be into running and run in pants, but if you were going to go to the Olympics, you'd wear, the little briefs, you know? Like, you can be a recreational rock climber.
If you run every day, you're not running in pants. Unless it's, like, you're running in the freezing cold or something. Like, you're not running in pants.
This video of Chappelle when he just swings around. It's the funniest.
This is funny. So that should become a GIF.
Yeah, I'm just the swinging. The transition of the swing is the funniest thing.
So, yeah, everyone wears shorts when they rock climb.
I gotta put it down. When his little legs swing around, he's like in Cirque du Soleil. Okay, sorry. No one at Chappelle in this, please. So what's the verdict?
Verdict on what? We were talking about like five different
things.
Do
they wear pants?
Yeah, no, they all wear shorts. Men and women all wearing shorts here.
So you were right. So you're just saying that Chappelle and Taryn contradict your idea of a professional rock climber.
I guess they're not pros yet, yeah.
You wouldn't know it by Chappelle's video. He's mastered the art form. He is doing very well. Like, I'm making it like he's not doing well. Like,
I think I would be exceptionally bad at this, although I do a pull-up. So it's sort of a pull-up machine almost. You put, like, some weight on it, and you do pull-ups. So I have been doing that, so maybe I'd be better than I would have been 6 months ago, but I don't think I'd be particularly good at it.
Well, also, they seem to be on some weird, to be clear, no one cares. They're on what I would describe as a like life-size string of like purple of like pink chewing.
Well, I think that's probably for beginners. I think that's probably for beginners to help them. Is my
I don't think so. He's like, there's just like big rocks and then just like this like weird thing to climb. Like beginners is just like a lot of big holds like close together.
My kids will go once in a while. There's a couple of rock climbing places that they,
I can hear Yosef. I could climb to the tallest,
All right, the moon. See banana. There's actually like a giant rock climbing place that I pass on the way to, work every day, and it's just like in the street, but it's like a wall. It's almost like a building, but it's a rock climbing wall. And I feel like I would be terrified. I'd be terrified to just like climb up, you know, like up on the street, like to the second and third floor of a building.
Is it for public use?
Looks like it. Now I've never seen it. I only see it from, like, you know, passing a train. So you see it for like 5 seconds every day, and I don't know anything more about it. But it looks like it is a public use rock climbing wall.
Don't they have to have people like belay you or something? Like people are just free.
I don't know. I can't see the bottom. I can only see the top.
The fact that you have just, that's something I would have driven to. Well, you have a you have like a long journey, so.
I don't even know where it is. I'd have to go like back. It's, you know, it's like a 7 minute train ride from my office. I'd have to really go find it. Maybe one day I'll go out on an adventure when there aren't like rockets in the air and I'll try and go find it.
Yeah, no, if you're.
Imagine if I went now, is like, what happened to Akiva? It's like, well.
Yeah.
For a rock wall.
It's like, no, unrelated to the war, he fell off a rock wall into the traffic.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of like funny lines, like, you know, Nick is like, well, let's cut their power. Oh, they decide. So they find out that their soda gun has been cut. And it's like, Cece later says this when she's like, how could she ruin the booze? Like, we've been here the whole time. It is absurd that they think while they've been sitting there, she has somehow come in and cut their soda line. But whatever. Nick says, like, let's cut their power and paint a door where there isn't a door. And this might not be related to that, but just in general, to compete with them. And Smith's like, we're not talented enough to paint a realistic door. It's like stupid, but it's very funny. What do you think of Schmidt's proposed changes to the bar? So he says, let's just get a jukebox that doesn't catch fire sometimes. Let's have separate olive and cherry trays and a toilet that flushes down instead of up.
Yeah, I think the bar at some point will become like successful. You know, for a little bit, but if I had to guess, based on the fact that they're like, oh yeah, we forgot to name this bar, and now we're going back and towards the end of the season naming it, I don't think this is like an end game bar. I think we'll be done with the bar by next season.
That's interesting. I don't remember what happens at the bar, so this is not a spoiler, just like truly having been watching it with you. I feel like Nick has to buy the full bar from Schmidt for this full story to get, like, realized, right? Like, it's all about how Nick loves the bar, Nick's defending the bar, Schmidt invested in Nick, Schmidt invested in the bar, but he's, like, doesn't really care about it, prefers Presh. So I almost feel like the true success is, like, Nick wholly owns the bar, and then we can sort of call it a day.
Yeah, or, like, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll sell it. Maybe they'll, like, need it once, like, for his wedding or something, and he'll sell it.
That's also possible. People might at me and be like, wow, like, great pretending you don't know what happens. And be like, yes, I am an actor. Mm-hmm. No, I just simply forgot. All right. So Cece reveals that she was actually the one who cut the line on the soda gun. And too late, Nick and Schmidt have already put an expensive fish in the bar, in Presh's vents. I do love that the real satisfying part of Schmidt's revenge is that it was a classy fish so that he can, like, compete with Connie. Like, yeah. I put a Bronzino in there, then she'll really know I have taste.
Yeah, Bronzino, is that the classiest fish? What's the classiest fish?
I don't know if it's the classiest fish, but my mom likes it. It's a good fish, mild white fish. Got a lot of bones, though. Got to get it nicely filleted.
I'm anti the bones in the fish.
Well, it's tough when you're eating animals to say that those animals should not have bones.
Why didn't they think about me, these animals?
It's a difficult position to say that. You could be just a vegetarian and then you wouldn't have to worry about the bones. Or, you know, eat your boneless chicken breast, which I imagine is less of a traumatic experience than little bones. I agree. It can be tough to eat fish.
Mm-hmm. Probably tougher for the fish, but yeah, I guess.
we actually had no problem. Last time we were together, we ate fish and we had no issue.
Mm-hmm. We didn't even think about the fish at all. We didn't, like, really consider its feelings, so kind of rude of us.
Also, what a wild time, because, like, now it would I'd be hard pressed to go to.
For sure. Bar, no, terrible. I think that's
terrible.
For sure, that's like, yeah, you can't. You know, my mom said, like, in her neighborhood, which is certainly Jewish, for the first couple of weeks after the text, for sure, maybe still, I don't know. You know, there was, like, nobody in the streets. Like, people were just depressed and home, and nervous and you know, like people were doing what they had to do, but they weren't really hanging out and going to restaurants and going to eat and things like that, for sure. At work, I said, like, you go to a restaurant and it's empty. And it's like, oh, this is sad. Because they already just dealt with this for, obviously, there's way bigger victims than restaurants, but, like, you know, it's still their job. Like, the same way I would, you know, love not to, you know, you're nervous and, you know, don't want to work, but, like, I have to work every day the same way you had to work beforehand, you know?
Connie in a similar boat, you know, she's had a tough year too. Cat died, husband left her for a neighbor, then left the neighbor for the mother, then her other cat died, then she killed a dog on the way to the vet with the dead cat. My immediate thought was like, set Connie up with Winston. This feels like a Winston level, two cats and upset about your ex. Get her and Winston together.
Connie and Winston. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
I'm shipping it.
I'm shipping up to Boston.
So basically they have this very, very short-lived, I was going to say war, but that doesn't feel appropriate, where Connie's going to destroy them when they least expect it. Nick gathers the families together of the local office, of the local, you know, proprietors of the local establishment. And, like, that happened in The Office much more successfully, where he gets, like, the families together of the business owners in the office building. So I was a little bit like,
They stole it from The Office?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, every idea is wholly original, but, like, it's a very memorable episode when they get, and I think he calls it, like, the families. Anyway, but they make a truce, whatever. Nick and Schmidt have this moment of, like, we're going to announce that we have valet. Okay, Schmidt cries over it. Connie calls for a truce. Nick, of course, asks her out. And producer Kelly says, did Schmidt validating Nick's hard work and Nick getting Schmidt valet for their bar have any sort of payoff for this storyline? Felt meh to me.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't like I like the idea of this like Godfather type storyline, but it should have been a 6-episode thing, not like resolved in 7 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it was. I think they just tried to do a lot. Like, but in the same episode, they get like Sam and Jess together. Like, I just feel like they did a lot of like complicated material in an A B plot that should have been. They could have been maybe 2 A plots.
I agree. I think, and also they had no time for a C, maybe the weakest or least amount of C plot of any episode of the series so far, right? So maybe it could have been a special episode. I do think they should experiment with the format more. Maybe like there's episodes where you have, you know, it could have just been the whole thing, like start to finish, 22 minutes at the bar or over a few episodes and splice more things in because, yeah, it's just too rushed and you don't really care enough. And there's no stakes.
Yeah. So in... Season 4, episode 14 of The Office called Chair Model, which aired April 17th, 2008, so almost to the day that this episode aired, they have the 5 families who are the... Is this the right episode? Who cares? Maybe it's not this episode. Whatever. They have a meeting of the 5... Oh, yes, it is this episode. Then they have the meeting of the bosses of the office park called the 5 families. Anyway, I feel like I'm being very boring this episode, but no, we're in a dark place. Fascinating. Pass, like Peter, pass. All right, let's get to the guide. You already said you think you're only going to see Sam one more episode. We see Connie again, Presh.
I don't think we see Connie. I don't think we see Presh. I do know we see Sam for sure. That's about it.
And then Connie makes a comment. The whiskey that turns out to be Nick's friend's homemade whiskey is the best whiskey she has ever tasted.
Had. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For a bar owner, so probably someone who's well-versed in the whiskey department.
And then nothing comes of it except that Nick then asks her out. And she's like, what about me saying I like the whiskey led to this?
Right. It's such a weird conversation because... She's not interested. There's one small tag joke where they turn to some other guy, is like the gross spaghetti guy I'd rather go out with, and he's like hard pass. You know, it didn't make any sense, honestly.
So I have to believe, as someone who's a believer in continuity, obviously, and is very consistent myself, that, like, something has to come of this, that Connie, like, maybe Nick will become a whiskey wholesaler to Connie. Like, is there a nutmeg wholesaler, the whiskey? Like, why is this mentioned that Nick, and also it's like, he could have, there could have been a gag that it's like some bottom shelf whiskey that, like, she doesn't know, or Nick, Nick has a taste. He was able to, like, identify a good whiskey. Like, Nick's got a friend that he names, I think he says Adam or something. He, like, names the friend who makes this whiskey, and then we don't touch it again. So I have to believe that that's going to be relevant, or is a big waste of a throwaway line.
I think it might have been a throwaway. I just think based on the episode, they may have just thrown some stuff away here.
Okay. We'll see. When he buys the bar with the money from the whiskey, let me know.
You'll be the first person I tell.
Hold on. Okay. Producer Kelly says, who won the episode? You want me to tell you what she says?
Interesting. I hadn't thought about it yet. Give me Kelly's take while I decide.
She says, Winston, he's the only person behaving reasonably in this whole episode and still has fun bits with the friend face, cop face, and allegedly things.
Yeah, it's not a bad take, and I don't think it's because it's a great Winston episode because he barely has a storyline, but yeah, I do think he's the grown-up here. It's like, hey, you have to, like, what is going on? You're the restraining order and stuff, and balancing between being a friend and being a police officer. So I like Winston. It can't be Jess, obviously. It's not a particularly great Schmidt episode. Nick, I guess, like, ultimately comes out on top a little bit, right? He like, the bar situation was really bad and gets better, so you could make a case for Nick here. But he does get rejected pretty brutally at the end, so I'm going to give it to Winston. CeCe's barely in this episode.
Yeah, it's tough. I like the line where she, like, says, like, he loves the bar, and he's like, what do you know, you booze hound? But, like, that's not really about her. I don't know. I'm willing to say there's no winner, because if there has to be a winner, I agree with Kelly's analysis, it's Winston. It's like, then it becomes like my headphone just dropped out of my ear. Do I have, like, giant ear holes or something? Anyway, Jess is the only one with a winning outcome, but she cannot be the winner because, like, that's going to be a toxic journey.
No, she's the episode. She lost the episode.
So then it's like Nick and Schmidt, I mean, have no outcome. And, like, so I guess Winston, but I really think there's no winner. But I didn't dislike this episode as much as Kelly, though I do understand and agree with the criticism. All right, let's get out of here. You know, everyone's got stuff to do. Season 5, episode 15 is called Jeff Day. While you mull over that, check out 32 fans, as I already mentioned, Alex and Kiwi talking about Israel and Gaza, and your sports talk is on the Patreon. So
no, we did we have an NFL episode on the main feed and picks for this coming, like, sort of recap on the main feed and preview on the Patreon. Yeah.
Okay, great. And then I actually don't know what's going on this week when Rob has a podcast world.
Rob, I know.
I'm sorry. Rob and Akiva need a podcast world.
We are doing the pitch. Listeners are coming on and basically pitching a different ideas based on various topics. And we're going to try and put some stuff on the wheel. Pick
so it's
best pitcher.
So it's all mailbag.
It's not all mailbag. It's a competition between, there's like different sort of challenges.
But it's mailbag pitches.
It's basically mailbag pitches. Yes.
Okay. So it's if you wanted your idea pitched correctly and not Akiva's bastardization of it, come on this episode.
A little bit, yes. And I do think, listen, ultimately the show is about finding more ideas for the show. And that's, you know, that is what an app is. We're always, you know.
What did I listen to? I listened to We Rank Sins, Not Tragedies, which, what a funny, speaking of people taking things seriously that are so stupid, like, I don't know where you got Give Pizza to Orphans from as a metric, but...
I think Rob's bit.
It was very funny.
Life. Yeah, that was a good one. That ended up coming out. We did a trapped one where we were stuck in
the
podcast.
Oh, yeah, I listened to that. I listened to that. My dog ate my homework.
And we watched, you know, we're old enough, we're doing things for the sixth year in a row. We watched Leprechaun with Chappelle the sixth straight year. We watched one of the Leprechaun movies.
Wow. There we go. All right. Check all of that out. The challenge, season 39, battle for new champion. We in it. Me and Brian talking about it. Robinswebsite.com/challenge feed. And Kiwi and I are here talking about New Girl.
Hopefully we'll be back next week. Let's try and do another episode next week.
Well, let's be back home 3 times in a row, and then we can actually have ice cream on the third one.
Yes, the third one will be ice cream. Although I have not had ice cream since, in 6 months now, but why not? Let's try
it. What about like frozen Cool Whip? That's what all like the diet girlies of the 90s love.
Is there like healthier yogurt maybe I could have? I'll have to go to the store and check it out.
Oh, you know what? I actually saw something on TikTok that was like, if you freeze yogurt and you can put like little peanuts in it or whatever, little treats, dark chocolate, whatever, that you can have kind of like a little cold treat. But then I like yogurt, would rather just not struggle to eat it cold. With that.
Yeah. It's the yogurt. What do you yogurt? My baby has like these drinking yogurts. That's his favorite thing in the world. Like he would, you know, like.
Like Danimals?
Yes. Yeah, he has at least one a day. It's his favorite thing in the world. He just goes to the fridge. One of the annoying things about kids is like when they get older and they can open stuff. So like he can open the fridge. He can open people's doors now, like Kenny from South Park style, by sort of like climbing on the handle and opening it. So it is very like I have to like lock my office now because he could just get in and you'll like. Yesterday I just sat like my work computer was on his lap. Like he could have. Like, I had to go through my likes. I happened to have Twitter open. I was like, oh, he probably liked hate speech or something accidentally by smashing all the keys.
Well, the funny thing about my nephew is, like, he's all celebration. So he notifies you when he's obtained something he's not supposed to have. And then you have a decent period to, like, correct it. Because he doesn't realize that, like, in notifying you, he's now blown up his own spot. So, like, if he finds someone's cell phone, he gets, like, a whole face and does, like, a little celebration. And then you can yoink it from him. And he's like, oh, shoot. Like, you can't celebrate. You got to take it to a private area and then celebrate. But he's not as much of a problem. But the drinkable yogurt tracks because Shy is a big condiment guy. So what is liquid yogurt if not a sauce?
It is true. Most of the time he's worrying about ketchup and mayo. That's a good point. So why not?
Well, to him, like conceptually, what's the difference between drinkable yogurt and ketchup and mayo?
It's true. It is condiments in a closed package you could put a straw in, which is much more fun.
That's
awesome.
I
know Adira used to drink garlic mayo. I've said this and it grosses people out. When she was two, we caught her a couple times drinking it with a straw.
We caught her. Oh, God. Not a girl after my own heart on that one. All right. So if you want to ask questions, it's linked in my Twitter, @LoushTweets. Follow Kiwi at Kiwi26. Kiwi, what do you think Jeff Day is going to be about?
So Jeff, I'm trying to think. CeCe's father, have we met him? I mean, Jess's father, have we met him?
Rob Reiner.
And his name is not Jeff, right?
I don't know what his name is, but I will tell you it's not Jeff.
So then maybe it's CeCe's. Why do I keep saying CeCe? Maybe it's Jeff's brother. We're going to meet Jess's brother.
Ooh, we've met Jess's sister. We had 3 episodes on Jess's sister. Well, we have 1 on Jess's brother. We will see next week. Stay safe, Keith. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
And it's, I don't know. It's scary. And I don't know if you should speak up. If people are saying anything anti-Semitic or Islamophobic or anything, like speak up. Even if it's annoying, even if they're, and trust me, I know there'll be 20 losers and insane people in your comments immediately telling you no babies were beheaded or anything like that. It's still worth speaking up and making other people feel safe because a lot of people don't feel safe right now. But also, if you are Jewish and a lot of our listeners are Jewish, like don't. It's maybe like scared in your head, but like
we've survived it over a couple worse.
Survived much worse than a bunch of sociology grads ripping down posters. Like we'll be okay.
Ali and Akiva gonna talk a TV show and maybe Jenny Garner, so don't go any farther. All the way to